Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series.
You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Jean Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Watch Hacks, streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay. He's only films to be bedded with.
Hello, and welcome to Films to be Buried With, The Resurrection! My name is Brett Goldstein. I'm a comedian, an actor, a writer, a director, a Queen tribute band, and I love film. As Mae West once said, "You only live once, but if you do it right, once is enough." The same cannot be said for The Muppet Christmas Carol, which you need to watch at least 6 times a year. That is quite right, Mavis West. Thank you. Every week, I invite a special guest over. I tell them they've died. Then I get them to discuss their life through the films that meant the most to them. But not this week! This week, I use my newly acquired shamanic powers to bring back a former guest from the dead. And I ask them 12 new questions. And this week, it's the magical return of Mr. James McNicholas. Head over to the Patreon at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein, where you'll get, I think, about 25 minutes, maybe more, extra questions and chat with James. You get a killer secret. Is he a killer? Find out in the Patreon. And the whole thing is available as an uncut video there. All this and more over at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein. If you haven't seen Ted Lasso yet, you can see all of season 1 on the Apple TV app. Watch it. You'll love it. It'll make you happy. It'll make you feel good inside. So, James McNicholas is an actor, writer, sketch-co, podcaster, and now incredible stand-up. And his original episode was one of my favourites of films to be buried with. So there's a lot of pressure on his return, but I'd go so far as to say that this one's even better. This is the Grease 2 of Resurrections. And a little word of warning, in case you're confused, I called James Beast because of his sketch show, Beasts. Okay? I mean, that's about it. So I just keep saying Beast, I think, and you might be like, what's he on about? But I'm talking to James. There isn't like an extra Beast in there. It's just James. Anyway, that is it for now. I very much hope you enjoy episode 135 of Films to be Buried With, The Resurrection! Hello, and welcome to Films to be Buried With, The Resurrection. It is me, Brett Goldstein, and I am joined today by an actor, a writer, a stand-up, a sketch-co, a boxer, a novelist, a memoirist, a husband, a mover, a shaker, a eater, and a drinker, and a football enthusiast.
Thanks so much.
And a legend. Please welcome back to the show one of my all-time favourite guests. It's Mr. James McNicholas.
Wow. Thanks, Brett. I would say I'm approximately half those things. So that's a decent ratio.
It's a pretty good score for me, I think.
Yeah.
How are you, Beast?
I'm good, thanks, man. How are you?
I'm all right, thanks. You have moved into a new place.
I have.
I can see it in your background.
This feels very natural to be here on Zoom with you, because I don't think I'm giving too much away to say that you've been one of my lockdown quiz companions.
Yeah. We've been doing a Saturday night Zoom session every Saturday with just you and me staring into the void.
And there are no answers. We just ask questions.
Yeah. Did we just ask for questions? Sometimes we just stare at each other and go, what does it mean?
Yeah.
Then if anyone can answer it, well done. And we'll come back next week, ask the same question.
Come back next week, ask the same question, see if it's changed.
Yeah.
So, no, I mean, you know, in many ways, I feel like you've been sort of holding my hand through the lockdown experience, through the COVID vibe.
I felt that way too. I appreciate it. Now, you are the episode that I recommend to people the most, genuinely, the one that we did before. And it's partly because of your absolutely cracking chat about death. and the fact that you're married to Camille Uchan, who is...
Yeah.
Well, let's check in on that situation. Last time we checked, I think the last time we did this podcast, maybe a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
She was...
No, she's not dead. She's not dead, actually.
Okay, good. That was the first thing to check. And that you were living with someone whose fear of death was near constant every 3 minutes.
Yeah.
Has that changed, or do you enjoy that? Has that become more
fun? I'll tell you what's not ideal for someone who's got a bit of a fear of death is a global pandemic, turns out.
Right, right.
It's not the optimum scenario for them. But, I think she's done really well in the circumstances. I mean, death is everywhere at the moment. On the news, they put up a big number every day. Just reminding you, just so you all remember, people dying, guys. And, you know, obviously the narrative is such that you can die for the most minor indiscretion. Before it was like, don't drive too fast. Now it's wash your hands a lot. Do you know what I mean? That the parameters have shifted so dramatically. But I think on balance, yeah, I think Camille's doing pretty well given that. It is a tricky time. Death is absolutely everywhere. I was just saying to you, before we started, that I go to therapy. I've continued to see my therapist during lockdown, not illicitly, you know, when the rules allow it. Otherwise, we've been doing this, we've been Zooming, which, by the way, therapy via Zoom, not worth the money for me.
Really? Go on. Why do you say that?
I just feel like...
Is it a man or a woman, your therapist?
It's a woman. It's an older woman, obviously. All I talk about is my mum. So I've chosen an older woman as my therapist.
Do you worry that while she's listening to you, she's actually looking on Twitter? Is that the problem with her being on Zoom? Have you seen a tweet that she sent and you look at the timeline and you're like, I was literally in a session with you?
It's just that thing. Yeah, exactly. You know, like when you're on like WhatsApp or FaceTime and then it suddenly goes call holding and you're like, what are you doing? What are you up to, actually? There's a bit of that. But I just feel like I think it feels less organic, you know. I just can't. I mean, it doesn't bode well for this podcast, but the flow isn't always there. And I do think she has looked a bit bored.
Right,
the thing is, as someone who's a performer, I can't. Do you experience this? Because I know that, I hope you don't mind me saying, I know that you've attended therapy in the past.
You can say that. And I'm still doing it over Zoom myself, also with an older woman, and also mostly talking about your mum.
Do you have that thing where you sort of can't help but have a performative streak in a therapy session? Like, do you have that flash across your mind of like, am I being entertaining enough here?
100%. Once, it's only, three times, because I've counted and I've kept a scoreboard. I've seen her do the cheek judder where she's trying not to yawn.
Right.
And I've wanted to go, that is unacceptable.
Yeah. Yeah. You're front row.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm paying you.
Gig, yeah. If that were a gig, I would have destroyed you.
You should just execute a massive takedown and just be like, look, fair's fair. No, I do that. And I even do this thing. I mean, I think people listening will be like, James, I don't think you're doing therapy right. But I'll do this thing at the end where I'll sort of say, so was that good today?
Oh, yes. I check nearly everything I say. I go, was that good? Was that right? Was that, like, it's right or wrong answers. Was that right? Do I get points? How many points?
I know.
How many points for that?
But I think my therapist might be trying to break up with me.
Oh, God.
I think there's... Because, you know, a few times there's been that little thing of like, you know, we should talk about ending soon. Which is weird because...
Maybe you could.
I don't know. I doubt that very much. I doubt that very, very much. The other day she was like, have you ever thought about killing yourself? And I was like, well, to be honest, my initial answer was no. I had a caveat to it. I had two caveats. One caveat was, if I knew I was going to die and I felt like it was going to be in a way that I wasn't happy with, let's say if I was very ill in an unpleasant fashion, I think I would want to exercise some control. I'd be off to Switzerland, basically. Are we still allowed to do that after Brexit?
Oh God, it's probably gonna need a special visa now. That's
special visa. It's a lot of paperwork, isn't it? Yeah. Just to die. So there's that caveat. And then I had another caveat, which I think means that my initial answer was wrong, because my other caveat was, well, I guess I have wanted to, but only at points where I thought I had a really good reason. Like I was sort of saying, guys, it's not that I was mad. I just logically thought this is the best thing to do in this scenario.
I mean, I got a couple of questions. One is,
yeah,
I don't know a lot about how to be a therapist, but I did think that, Do you have suicidal thoughts is an early doors question, not a question you do towards the end. And also,
it would be a hell of a time to leave me, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I love that she's going, it's probably time for us to wrap up. Just before I go, have you ever thought about killing yourself?
Off you go, push you out in the street.
Yeah.
I see how you crack on. Yeah, fair point, to be honest, Brett. Maybe I should be the one initiating this breakup. But maybe she's listening.
But maybe she thinks you're cured, which again is a weird
thing. Do I sound cured?
You sound very emotionally healthy.
I also have this paranoia. I don't know if you have that because, you know, it's 2020 and we're all online. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I do podcasts and stuff as well. She says she has no idea and she doesn't listen. I'm just so nosy and so self-obsessed that I can't quite believe that.
Oh, yeah.
Surely you've Googled someone once. Can I say, by the way, that I've recently belatedly watched Ted Lasso and I absolutely loved it. Congratulations.
I'm so glad that you love it because you're a football man.
I'm a football man and my brother is a real life football man. He's a football agent. I told him to watch it. He smashed through it. Smashed through it in the week free trial. Doesn't even have to subscribe.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
That's the dream, isn't it?
It's so good, guys. If you've not seen it, it's a brilliant show.
I'm so glad. And you know that Coach Beard, Brendan Hunt, he's a big fan of yours, reads all your blogs.
Unbelievable.
I mean, it's really good to hear a proper football guy like it. And I wanted to ask you are the only person I know who has been to the football, who's actually been live in the on-the-pitch football.
Well, I've not been on the pitch, Brett. That isn't how it works.
You've been scoring goals in Premiership football, as you've told me.
I've been very, very, as I've told you in my desperate attempt to get a part in Ted Lasso, I'm a professional footballer. I've been near the pitch, yeah. It's very weird.
Tell me about it, please. Tell us all.
Imagine, if you will, watching a football match that is played in a hospital.
Right.
It has very much that feeling, incredibly sad. And I don't mean like in an exciting Nike advert way where they're like, you know, running down the corridors and jumping over beds. It's just very sanitized, stale. Everyone's got their masks on. It feels deeply impersonal. But, you know, there are upsides to it. I mean, you get to hear everything the players are saying, which is quite good fun.
What are they saying? Mostly swears?
Mostly swears. A lot of swearing's happening. Shocking that that's not being clamped down on. But Arsenal have got this player called Willian, and enjoyably, the manager and all the other players all refer to him as Willy. So you just it's a lot of grown men running up and down, shouting, Willy! Willy, Willy, Willy! Willy, go! Willy, come! Willy, Willy!
Give it, Willy!
Yeah, give it, Willy, exactly. So that's worthwhile. Do you know what I mean? That's kind of fine. Special. I'll be able to tell my grandkids about that.
I'm curious, like, there's something interesting, I think, sort of mad about, like, when it started, football came back and you could have the option of watching it without fake crowd sound and watching it with fake crowd sound. I watched it without fake crowd sound because I thought, well, this is real. I want to see the real. Mm. It was so depressing and felt like you were suddenly just felt like you were watching a practice. It was like, this isn't, there was no, it felt dead. Like this is, like you say, like a hospital. So then now I watch it with the crowd sound. But then I also think that's fucking insane. We're all watching with a fake, like what's wrong with us? Why can't we just accept what's the real world?
I guess, although I suppose to an extent we've been watching sitcoms with augmented laughter tracks probably for quite some time.
That's true.
I did exactly the same thing. I was like, listen, I can't be having the fake crowd noise. It's got to be the authentic experience. But I suppose what I realise is that, and I should be careful saying this because I am literally employed as a football journalist, but I sort of didn't care about it without the fans. It sort of ceased to mean anything. You know, I wouldn't watch a Netflix comedy special without an audience there. Can I just turn off the sound so I can just hear the purity of the jokes? I don't think that would
work
for me. It is a live experience, and that chemistry between you know, audience and performer is so much part of it.
No, I was watching clips of Harry Kane goals, and there was the goal, sorry to bring it up, where he scored against Arsenal when he had his mask on, and he takes his mask off and runs, and they fucking crack the sound of it. It's such a magical moment, but part of that is the crowd and him and his excitement. The thing I find interesting now is how the players celebrate when they score a goal now with no crowd is almost apologetic. Like they sort of run towards the stand and then stop themselves, like embarrassed. Like, sorry, yeah, just a little high five, cool, whatever.
Yeah. I think I saw a piece the other day about has COVID killed the football celebration. I think there's something to be said for that. When you say Harry Kane was wearing a mask, that's not a COVID thing, right?
No, if it was, he was wearing it entirely wrong because it was over his eyes.
You don't see a lot of that in boots. You know what I mean? People getting that wrong.
Cover your nose and mouth.
difficult to go shopping with the eyes covered, but give it a go. I mean, actually, I had a question for you. Like, is Ted Lasso, obviously it's coming back, are you going to have to reflect the pandemic, or is it just going to be like, we pretend it didn't happen?
No, we are living in a world without it. So maybe by then, you know, everything will be cured and we'll be all fine.
We'll all be vaccinated by then.
Yeah.
Except my grandma, who's steadfast, she won't be having it.
Really? Why? She doesn't want Bill Gates in her head?
I don't know. She's just stubborn, isn't she? She's in the highest risk category, but she'll be the last to do it. Some people won't help themselves. What's her reason?
Yeah.
I don't know. To be honest, she doesn't trust. She's at that point in her life where she doesn't trust anyone or anything. And who can blame her?
No, fair play.
But yeah, great.
What is it she thinks is going to happen?
Okay, so I think she thinks that she will turn into a COVID. Do you know what I mean? That she will. You know that picture? You know that picture we've all seen of COVID, the little crowny
with the
thing?
Red stalks,
the little alien thing.
Yeah,
is there an emoji for that? If there's not, there should be.
There is.
Thank goodness.
Yes.
Well, I think she thinks that's her fate. Like The Fly or something, to bring it back to films, that she'll just sort of gradually descend into being the virus. Listen, I'm working on it.
That's fine. No, listen, I get it. I, you know, obviously, I've been told that Bill Gates has put microchips in the vaccine that will go into our heads and turn us into robots, which I get, and I'm not, you know, afraid of. I'm just not sure what he wants with us if he does do that. Because if he's putting microchips in our head just to buy Windows... Do you know what I mean? I go, we'll just do adverts, do more adverts.
Do more adverts. I think he can afford it.
Yeah. To have started a global pandemic, to then come up with a vaccine, to then control our...
There had to be a better way. There had to be a better way.
More posters. Just do
By the way, when you were saying buy Windows, I'm so like... I've so emigrated to the incredibly expensive Mac side of things now that I thought you meant like in houses. I was like, has Bill Gates got a whole different avenue to his business empire?
He loves real Windows.
Not a lot of people know this, but Bill Gates is real specialist. He's a double glazing salesman.
Beast.
Yes.
You have been brought back to life. Welcome back to Earth.
But are you in this?
Like a sort of magical shaman. But what point in your life shall I bring you back to? Is there somewhere you'd like to go back and fix something you regret? Or now? Oh, go on.
I know very specifically. As soon as I saw this question, I was like, I know where we're going here.
Right,
we're going January 6th, 2018. Marissa Beach in Sri Lanka.
Ooh.
Any questions?
Oh, okay. No questions. No questions, Your Honor.
I think I have to explain, don't I?
Oh, a little subcategory. You were very nice about Ted Lasso. Let me say this. I realise, I think, when you did the podcast last time, you were about to go to Edinburgh to do your show, The Boxer, which was your first stand-up show.
Yeah.
It was... the smash sensation of the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. You then brought it to the Soho. I went to see it. It was phenomenal. It was an amazing show and a disgusting that was your first stand-up show because it was phenomenal. I was so angry how good it was.
That was why I did it. I was like... I really want to hurt Brett with this.
I sat there fuming.
Did you notice that I shouted, I screamed the whole show into your face for an hour? I don't know if you noticed that, but a lot of it was sort of
yeah. I was just staring at you like, how dare you be this good as that?
Yeah, and you were throwing stuff as well, do you remember?
Yeah, doing anything I could to put you off, and you just had a perfect comeback.
Yeah.
It was really,
you took
really
off both
good.
Your shoes, chucked them at me, I caught one in my mouth, one in my hand.
What were you worried about? Made it into a bit. I was like, fuck you, man. It was really brilliant, and for anyone who, I don't know if it exists in any form online.
The last time I did it was sort of, I think it was like early April, and it was around the time the pandemic was really kicking off. I think I played my part, basically.
You super spread it with your stand-up.
I didn't cancel the show, which you know, a fair bit of blood on my hands there, but we'll forget about that. I am going to re-tour it somewhere at some point.
Two things. One is you're now writing a book about it, right?
I am. I don't think that's been announced, but by the time this comes out, it will be.
The book is called Pissing Off Brett. And
is called Me Versus Brett. And it's just sort of a memoir of my life and Brett's life and why mine is better. And it's good, though. It's good to talk about doing the book because it forces me to actually do it. Do you know what I mean? As long as I've really managed to prevent it becoming a reality, because it turns out, I mean, the book is based on the show, but when I printed out the show on A4 pieces of paper, it was 13 pages long. Now,
pictures? How many pictures can you whack in it?
Let me tell you, I'll be adding some pictures in. I mean, there'll be, I think in that sort of book, you can have like a several picture sections. Do you know what I mean?
For sure.
But even so, I mean, even if I double space it, it's going to be difficult.
The way things are with like Twitch and stuff, I think you could even have pictures of you writing the book to fill up some pages. Like people like the making of stuff. Like just have a couple of pictures of you thinking about how to fill pages. That'll fill some pages.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, to be honest, given the amount of time I've got to finish it, it's probably going to be stream of consciousness. So it's just going to be sort of start to finish, a sort of present continuous account of what I'm doing. But exciting, you know, and you've written a book, Brett. Have you ever talked about that on air?
Who knows? I can't remember anymore.
I didn't know you'd written a book till I think it came up as a round in our lockdown quiz.
Oh, yeah.
Would you like to tell the listeners about your book?
Years ago was paid to write a erotic novel for women as a woman. writing as a woman, you know.
So what?
Under the pseudonym of Sophie.
Sophie was your pseudonym, okay. Yeah. I feel like you're avoiding the surname for fear this novel is Googled and publicised, and probably with some justification. Although I have heard sections of it, and I will say, you know, it's convincingly erotic.
Yeah, I think it's sort of, you know, I did a lot of research and a lot of work on it. I read a lot of books about sexual psychology and all sorts.
Yeah.
I took it very seriously. You know, you're gifted a gig like that. You've got to take it seriously.
That is impressive, yeah. I read books about sexual psychology when I was like 17, just because I sort of found them titillating and I thought it would help me get women to go out with me and stuff, but didn't.
No, work. It's quite dark. When you read that stuff...
Yeah, it's actually really bleak, isn't
it? It's really dark and you realise, oh, everyone is fucking dark.
Absolutely messed up. But, I mean, yeah.
Look, because I'd done a first draft, but the first draft was far too tame, it turned out. Because I then, you know, checked with a lot of women. Is this the thing? Is this your cup of tea? And everyone was like, come on.
Yeah.
Stick some horrible shit in it. What's going on? Yeah.
Maybe we'll do a special podcast one day where you and I read that book to each other.
I'd love that. I feel like that's an original idea for a podcast, right? Brett wrote a porno.
Why not? Work for them.
Oh, one question I wanted to ask you is, because that show was so successful, you know, you were supposed to just do a run in Edinburgh. In Edinburgh, you had to do loads of extra shows. Then you had to keep doing extra shows in Soho. You're doing extra shows forever. True say between us and no one listening. Did you ever get bored of it? Were you ever like, fucking, I've got to wheel out this fucking thing again? Or did you have to do something in your head to make it always exciting and interesting? Because it was the same show for a lot of times over a year.
Yeah, all right, mate. There we go. But we've all got a crust. It's an interesting question. I actually probably experienced the inverse, because when you start doing it, you're sort of like, is this good? Do you know what I mean? And there's that sort of sense of like, you're still finding it. You don't know necessarily where, you're not guaranteed to land the laugh certain places, or, you know, the emotional kickers here and there. And then I think because it went well and because it was well received and because it was my first show, I grew in confidence through the process of doing it. And by the end, I was like, oh, okay, I'm really, not only am I doing this, I'm properly performing it now. I'm sort of enjoying it. So no, I think that's because it was my first solo show, like you say. I would imagine that were I as wearied as you by the whole facade, I would probably be bored at this point. It is a weird one though, because it was Edinburgh 2019 and obviously there was no Edinburgh 2020. So I'm sort of able to spin more life out of it, I think.
Oh, yeah, you never had to do the difficult second album.
No. Right. Hopefully never will.
That's great. Yeah.
Now I'm an author. Just, I don't want to go. I'm not going on stage again.
Avoid that at all costs. I think that is never. If you've really, really smashed your first year, second year, critics are horrible to you.
Exactly.
Just on principle. Just don't bother.
Have a decade off, come back, new name.
Yeah.
This time I'm called Sophie. It's a bit sexier than last time.
Dark, but sexy. Yeah. So, tell us about Sri Lanka, January 6th, 2018, for those who haven't seen your show.
I'll give you a quick presser. Yeah, if you've not seen the show, I talk about it in the show. If you have seen the show, just bear with me. So, I was on my honeymoon with my wife, Camille Uchan, who you know, and...
Yeah. Yeah. I thought you meant to the listeners. The listeners know. I know. I definitely. Yeah.
Oh, sorry. I was talking to you. Yeah. Yeah.
Right, yeah. No, I'm there.
This is what I mean about the Zoom. Do you know what I mean? It's just never quite. And I don't know about you, Brett, but I love Wales. Not the country. Hate it. But the aquatic mammal.
Huge fan of the whale.
Beautiful creature.
Lovely creature.
Ever seen whales in the wild?
Don't believe I have. I feel like if I had, I'd been quicker with that answer.
Yeah. I think you would. It's quite a cool thing. Something I've done quite a few times in my life. When I was a kid, my mum and dad took me to Iceland to do whale watching. I was very sick because it smells of sulfur, Iceland. But anyway, let's move on. And then I've did it in America, off the West Coast. And we were in Sri Lanka and they were like, do you want to go out and see the whales?
Fucking loves a whale, this guy.
This guy loves whales. So he obviously, he's getting on that boat. He's going to see the whales. I spent 6 hours on the boat. The long and the short of it is I spent the subsequent 2 years of my life feeling like I was on a boat. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think you have, you have a disease. Is that what we call it?
Yeah, I do. So basically, I got on the boat. I was fine on the boat. I got off the boat and a couple of hours after I'd been on the boat, I was like, oh, the world's sort of bobbing up and down as if I'm on a boat. It had been really rocky on the boat. That isn't in itself is not unusual. People do get that. But it usually resolves after like an hour or a day or a week. And in my case, it just didn't resolve. I could be sat perfectly still and it was like I was on a boat in a violent storm. It was absolutely the maddest thing that's ever happened to me. And this is coming from a man who told you that despite being an atheist on his last appearance on this podcast, that he had met Jesus. It was unbearable. And
do you still have this now?
So now, this is a real thing. It's got a name. It's called Mal de Debarquement Syndrome, which literally means disembarkation syndrome. Hmm. Little quick fact, it predominantly affects middle-aged women. So I'm a little bit of an outlier, but why not? And I'm on quite a powerful cocktail of drugs that dampened down my, with doctor's advice, I'm not just guessing, that dampened down my nervous system sufficiently to the point where I describe it now as, I mean, I have good days and bad days, but generally, as opposed to the first sort of year, which really was like being, I don't know, a tennis ball attached to a swing ball, now it's like we're having a sort of conversation on the deck of a ferry, you know? Wow, there's movement, man. But it's sort of peaceful. Anyway, a question I get asked a lot is, do you regret going on that boat?
Yeah.
And the very, 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 very short answer is, obviously, yes.
It's like, yeah, I love whales, but not that much.
Listen, I love me a whale.
I might have overstated how much I like whales.
Minky whale. Willy, willy, willy. But, yeah, I mean, it was just... It was not a sufficient... I mean, bear in mind, I'd already paid 60 quid to go on it.
Right.
So, for me, that was a sufficient price for the whale-watching trip. The price of my balance was a step too far.
Do you, 2 years later... I'm so sorry about that. Like, do you...
No, it is funny. I mean, it's definitely funny.
Do you have peace with it?
I do. I'm sort of half joking. I do have peace with it. I mean, look, Brett, as you say, I've got a lovely Edinburgh show out of it. We can't all complain.
Really good. And a book.
Everything. The boy's landed himself a book deal. That whale-watching trip's well paid for itself, I'll tell you that.
Listen, it was that or someone had to die. And
I do remember. It's quite funny because, like, I talk about it in the show and sort of, I think in context, it's quite poignant because although I'm sort of flippant about it, it was quite traumatic. Mm. But I do remember I worked with Tom Parry, who directed the show, and we were sort of trying to make that bit land, and we were kind of previewing it and changing it and previewing and changing it. And I do remember him at one point after the show being like, yeah, it's just a bit of a shame he didn't have cancer. Just would have worked much better.
Because it's like, easier to explain.
It's more sort of empathic. Do you know what I mean?
This sounds almost like weird, unbelievable. Like what?
It sounds like I made it up. Fully aware of that.
Yeah.
But Google it, guys. You'll be amazed. It's extraordinary. And I have to say, the really troubling thing about it, I mean, what you do when you get a weird condition like this is you join a lot of little Facebook groups and internet communities that sort of provide you support. And I have to be honest, like my life has kind of adapted. It's something that I live with, you know. The phrase new normal that's flying around COVID is nothing new to me.
Yeah.
But when you dip back into these groups, there are people who are like, yeah, 15 years, still feel exactly like I'm on a boat. It's not got any better.
Oh, God.
Who, I mean, I guess the only thing is, what if you loved boats?
Yeah. Maybe that's the thing to work on. Have you been on a boat since?
No, not one. And there's a woman, actually, who has this. And she goes round the world going on some of the world's most extreme roller coasters because she believes that one day she'll get off and the experience will kind of reset her brain. It's a neurological thing. And she believes that if she sort of messes with her balance enough, it will just kind of even out. It hasn't at all. She's absolutely fucked. Woman's lying on the floor. Terrible. Can't get up. Can't go to work.
I wonder if you should get on a boat and see if it, you know, the waves go the other way.
Yeah. I mean, it's got a lot better. At first, for the first 2 months or 3 months, no longer, 6 months, they were like trying to avoid public transport. A weird thing happens in cars where when you're driving, it feels all right. But as soon as you stop at the lights, it feels like the car's still moving. It's absolutely mental. And, you know, you asked me about killing myself. Like, without exaggeration, there was a point during that where I thought, I honestly can't be arsed with this.
No,
it's fine. It wasn't, like I told my therapist, it's like, it sort of wasn't sad. It was kind of like, well...
It's just practical. Well,
what are my options at this point? Yeah, right. Like, it. You know, I didn't believe I could get back on my feet. And actually doing that show and the experience of writing about it and kind of processing it into a narrative and into my life probably was the key thing in sort of enabling me to do that. It really helped. It allowed me to tell myself a story for comedic purposes that sort of I was comfortable with and that I could be content with. So although I say, let's go back to that,
I love that.
No, actually, I do still want to go back to that.
Tell me this, though.
Yeah.
And don't go in, you know, obviously I know the people involved. When you're having sexual intercourse and moving about, is that like being on acid now?
Well, you'll never believe this, Brett. I've got a waterbed, which really throws I'm joking. No, does it mess with that? No, actually, as with a lot of things in life, I feel like for men, at any rate, I feel like sex is such a sort of powerful physical experience that it can kind of dampen down or eradicate a lot of other things. Do you know what I mean? In the way awareness, the reason people get caught masturbating, essentially, that their kind of other senses diminish so dramatically
that they didn't notice anyone else was in the room.
Yeah, their sphere of interest sort of reduces. And it does sort of help in that regard.
So if you were having sex all the time, you'd be cured.
Yeah. I mean, there's another woman who just, I read about, who just, she just goes on boats 24/7. She just spends her life. She's an older lady, got a lot of money, spends her life on cruises. Hmm. Never feels any ill effects. That's the alternative, I guess. Right. I could become one of those sort of cruise line comics, you know?
I would love that. I feel like cruises are slightly, ooh, like they've, I feel like as a business, not the best time to hitch your wagon to the old cruises.
No.
But even
when you say you'd love that, do you mean you would love me to do it or you would love to do it?
No, I would love to watch a reality TV show about you being a cruise line comic. It's exactly what I think that was clear when I said I'd love that.
Right. Okay. Well, listen, if anyone's listening, let's make it happen.
So you go back to January 6, 2018. You don't get on the boat. And Camille, your wife, says, you love Wales.
But you love Wales,
James. We've paid 60 quid for this.
And I say, do you know what? There's plenty of other fish in the sea. And we all just crack on with our lives and everything's fine.
And then
fine.
You don't make your Edinburgh show.
No. And I'm fine.
You don't write your book.
And I'm fine, Brett. I haven't got a writing deadline.
You don't start a pandemic.
Start a pandemic. The world's a better place. I return to being completely unknown and irrelevant. And we all just move on.
It's not a bad answer. Right. So you've been brought back to life. And we're quite fine.
Do we talk about films on this, Brett?
Yeah,
I've
realised we should probably get on with that. So the first question, when you come back to life, everyone's like, oh, wow, it's so great to see Beast again. We love him. And someone's like, was he a stand-up? And they were going, no, he did very little. He achieved very little in his life. But it's nice to see him back. And they say, but they want to know about your life through film or something. And
Yeah. Have you done one of these recently?
And the first thing they want to ask is, what's the last film you saw, Beast?
The last film I saw in heaven, I guess. Or just the last I saw.
Literally the last film you saw.
Right, forget about all the heaven stuff. So the last film I saw, I believe, and I'm not sure how you pronounce it, because the Americans pronounce it differently to the Asian people in the film. Okja? Okja?
Oh, the giant pig director, Bong Joon-ho.
Yes, well done. Have you seen that?
I have not seen that, actually. Mad that I haven't.
I can't believe it. I've never heard of a film you never see. Well, yeah. It's an interesting film.
I thought it would sound horrible and depressing. That's why I didn't watch it.
It's kind of a satire about the meat industry, mm-hmm. Which I watched with my pescatarian wife. And mm-hmm. I think it really strengthened her resolve. I don't think I would eat that animal anyway. Do you know what I mean? I'd be looking at that thinking, where's that come from? It is a really strange film. I don't know if it's because the director is coming out of a different kind of cinematic culture. It feels a little bit like you're watching a film through the prism of Google Translate. It's a bit like there's some of the performances in it. I'll be interested to see what you make of it. Jake Gyllenhaal's having a good time. I'll say that. He's enjoying himself. He's like, I reckon he was like, this is from like, some online, who's making it? Never heard of, no one's going to see this. I'm just going to muck about. And it's quite good fun, but it does feel a bit like, and I'm not alleging this, if any lawyers listening, it feels a bit like all the performers are on lots of drugs.
Oh, wow. Well, that does sound fun.
Yeah. And then Paul Dano's in it, but he's in a different film. He's just doing something else. He's really earnest. It's like he didn't get the memo or he's not seen any of the other bits.
Well, he's not seen any of the rushes, I imagine. He's coming.
No. Let me tell you, when Paul Dano saw Jake Gyllenhaal's performance, he was like, oh, I've absolutely fucked this. Or vice versa.
Okay. Is it depressing, though?
No, I don't think it is. You know, it's got a feel-good ending, as far as I recall.
All right.
It makes you think about consumption and the meat industry. It's really interesting because, you know, clearly the sort of central core message of it is about, you know, mass production of meat and how that's problematic and genetic modification. But the sort of core character, the one we identify with in the film, she's not a vegetarian and she does eat meat and eat fish, as far as I recall, but just in a more kind of sustainable fashion. So, you know, I think it's sort of didactic without being preachy.
What a lovely review.
Yeah, there you go. Why's Camille coming in?
Oi, oi.
Hey.
I'm bringing you a cup of tea.
Ah. Hi, Con.
Thank you.
How are you?
Can't hear you, can I?
He's got his headphones.
Hi, thanks for that.
Neil just walked in to deliver Beast a cup of tea and to remind him of the ever-present spectre of death.
it is a mug emblazoned with skulls.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Stadtsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series. You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Jean Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with Hacks writer and actor Pat Regan, on how their improv experience helped them when shooting scenes and what it was like writing scripts for specific actors.
You'll also hear from crew members like the costume designers on what it was like creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Hear stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and more. Watch Hacks streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
Beast, who do you think should play you in the film of your life?
Well, there's different things, aren't there? There's who do I want and there's who am I going to get. I think a sort of happy medium.
Yeah.
If it's sort of a younger me, Taron Egerton, I would say.
That is a lovely choice.
I mean, he's already shown himself willing to play a man who has glasses and is bald. Yeah. So, and I have actually weirdly been told that there's a passing resemblance, which... You know, it's kind
looking
to
at
me.
You now. Finally, you know, looking at your face, I agree.
If you imagine a sort of Hollywood version of me, the rough edge is smoothed. Mm-hmm. I think we're in that direction, and I think he's a good little actor, actually. Sounds very patronizing.
Yeah. Well done, Tom.
No, do you know what? He's having a go, and the thing is, he looks like he's enjoying it, and you can't knock him for that. Yeah.
And he looks like he's watched the rushes of the other actors in the film, so that he fits in.
Yeah. You've got to try and see the rushes, haven't you? I mean, you've been in films. You've got to sneak a peek.
You've got to know what you're in.
You know what I mean?
It does help to know what you're in.
Like, maybe there's a read through, but you don't know. Are people giving it 100%? Is that what they're going to do on the day? Are they doing the accent? Who's doing the accent? Do you know what I mean? Like, that's all these questions.
And often, I've done jobs where people are doing accents in the read-through and then they're not doing the accents on set. And I'm like, did someone tell you not to do the accent? Or have you decided since the read-through, I know that accent was bad? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Oh, it's so many things out of your control.
And it's like, if you're not doing it, are we doing it? I mean...
Yeah, did you want me to do it? Is that why you've stopped doing the accent?
Yeah. It's a minefield. They should put this stuff in contracts, really.
What is the most romantic film you've ever seen? I think you're romantic.
Do you?
Yeah.
I wonder if this choice will change that.
Go on.
Well, I have to say, I was very tempted by what I consider quite a cliche answer, which is...
Right. I just realised you just said he's racing through them now. I mean, I'm having a lovely time. It's just we're done 45 minutes, I worry.
Yeah. No, you're right. We've got quite a lot. What one word answers at this point?
quick fire round,
what's the best film I've ever made? Go. Alright, well, I will tell you, my wife Camille just came in and gave me a cup of tea a minute ago. We were friends for many years before we got together, and so consequently we knew each other at any rate. You know, we had our ups and downs, but consequently I was very tempted by When Harry Met Sally, because I do think that there's a real emotional truth to that, and I love that film as much for the sort of vignettes that aren't about Harry and Sally. I love the older couples. I think that's incredibly romantic in that movie.
Yeah.
But that's not what I've gone for. I've gone for the film Casper, The Friendly Ghost.
I love that film.
Do you?
Yeah, it made me cry a lot, Casper.
It's a really... I've not actually seen it, probably since I was a kid.
Yeah,
but
me too.
I reminded myself of some clips of it sort of in researching for this, and it is incredibly moving, because if you think about it, Bill Pullman, the dad, he's this kind of grieving father. Mm-hmm. He's lost his wife. She's died. And Casper himself is dead. And there is a kind of adolescent romance, really, between him and, is it Christina Ricci, I think, who plays the young?
Yes.
And it's just very touching and beautifully done. Like, there's this trope throughout the film where Casper keeps saying he's a really good dancer, which it's difficult to take seriously because he hasn't got any legs.
Yes.
But he keeps saying that. And then towards the end of the film, his wish is granted, and he takes a human form for the big Halloween dance, and he walks down the stairs and he dances with Christina Ricci. And she doesn't realize it's him until at the end when he says to her, "Can I keep you?" And it's something he says earlier in the film. She's lying on the bed. He's a ghost, and she falls asleep. He says, "Can I keep you?" And she replies, she goes, "Oh, it's cold. I can feel a breeze coming through the window. Can you shut the window?" And it's this really tragic moment of him saying, you know, "I want you, I want to be with you," but his presence is cold, you know, because he's a ghost. And then he says it in his full human form. And it's really beautiful, actually.
That is an incredibly romantic piece.
And also, in the same movie, there's this amazing scene where Bill Pullman sort of sees his wife again. She comes back from the dead, and she explains why she's not a ghost. She's like, "I don't have any unfinished business," because that's kind of the logic of the film. You only stay around if you've got unfinished business. And she's like, "I don't, you know, because I had a great life with you." And I think, for me, things that are what makes something romantic often is maybe that it is transitory. You know, we spend our lives trying to achieve permanence, but I think often things are beautiful because they can't last. And that idea of, "Can I keep you?" Well, the answer is no. So the fact that you have that person in that moment is great.
You are beautiful. No, you know what? It's occurred to me, thinking about that. I think, A, that's a wonderful answer. And B, it's just struck me that Casper, the film about a friendly ghost, is made by the director Brad Siebeling, I believe is how you pronounce it. And he made a film years later called Miracle Mile, which is based on his life, which I believe was about his girlfriend being murdered or dying. So either being killed or definitely, but she definitely died.
Wow.
When he was young, and how it affected him and this family and stuff. And also think he made City of Angels. Like he's interested
in
that,
death.
And that thing of, he did make City of Angels. Like, that idea of what Bill Pullman's wife says in Casper. Oh my God. I'm wondering if what you've stumbled upon here is that Casper is the greatest film ever made.
I mean, listen, there's some lovely comedy set pieces with the three cheeky uncles as well.
So cheeky. They are.
They're ever so cheeky. And there's also this kind of weird plot of that. I think the villain, she wants a machine that can bring people back to life. So I think she may deliberately die so that she can try and come back as a ghost. It's a fascinating film, but I can't remember what made me think of it. But yeah, I do think, you know, love and death have always been poetically associated. I mean, we've gone quite far up our own arse here, Brett, but you know, that's what this podcast is for.
Yes, thank you. It's called Films to Put Up Your Arse. It's another chapter from my
Films to Put Up Your Arse by Sophie.
What's the best film you ever saw that you never want to see again?
So this is one that I have a feeling someone else will have said, but my immediate answer to that would be Man on the Moon.
Oh.
Because having seen the documentary, I don't think I could enjoy it in quite the same fashion. Like, I love Man on the Moon or Man in the Moon?
Man on the Moon.
I love that film. Yeah, I really, really think it's brilliant, and I adored it, and I think Jim Carrey's performance is undoubtedly amazing. Mm-hmm. If I had been on that set with him, I would have really struggled.
Yeah.
I would have really, really struggled. Have you seen the documentary?
I have seen the documentary, and I kept sort of wishing that there would be a reveal that the documentary was fake.
Yeah, I want to see the documentary about that documentary. Yeah.
But yeah, it's unacceptable. It's really bad, and I felt sorry for everyone.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, guys, it's a professional environment. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
What Jim Carrey's not thinking is, how is this going to fly with HR?
It's also the thing of, I think, I don't know, maybe I'm, like, I'm all for, like, let's break down the system and let's mess around. And
of course you are, yeah, yeah.
But I think that what it isn't is done with love. Like, I don't think it's, like, done with the light, if I may. Like,
right,
it's just,
yeah.
it's him being, it's quite sort of seemingly malicious. Like, it seems to come from a dark place. It isn't like, hey, we're creating chaos and it's fun. It's sort of creating destruction and hurting people and making people's lives shit, rather than, look, I'm showing you a new way of being. Life's crazy, right? And here's luck. Do you know what I mean? Like, which I do think was also the spirit of the other guy, Tony Clifton. And I'm not saying there isn't an argument for it, but I just wouldn't want to be around it for sure.
It's also got that slightly odd thing where it's sort of like, well, guys, obviously, like, Jim Carrey at the end of the day can step out his trailer and be like, sorry about that, guys. Obviously, that wasn't me.
Yeah.
It's this, like, sort of get out of, well, I was possessed by the spirit of Andy Kaufman. And I feel a bit uncomfortable with sort of, you know, doing those acts in his name. I think it is true to the spirit to an extent. I just sort of think, God, that. I mean, I get a bit annoyed when people are like, not going to drop the accent between takes. Do you know what I mean?
Imagine that is that's bad enough. Good answer. What's the best action film you've ever seen? Do you like an action film?
Yeah, it's quite a broad category, action film, isn't it? Like,
it is.
I think a lot of things come unto it, under it.
Come unto it.
Oh,
come unto Christ.
Come. My actual answer here, I've vacillated, but I've gone for the second in the recent Planet of the Apes trilogy, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
What a great film.
I thought that trilogy was excellent. Yeah, really brilliant. Really. I think that is the best one, partly because it's got Gary Oldman doing his shouting in it, which... Yep. It's fun. It's sort of like the first one's great, but, you know, the apes ain't up to much at that point. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah. It's all set up, isn't it?
It's all set up. He says something at the end. And to be honest, it feels a bit weird when he does. Do you know what I mean? Because he's not spoken all the way through. What does he say, Andy Serkis? Home, or something like that. Or like, goodbye,
goes,
or something.
Oh, no, he goes, no.
Yeah, that's the first thing he says. And then he whispers something in his ear at the end, like, I love you or something. I don't know. But it sort of jars because you've sort of grown accustomed to, you know, just monkeys monkeying around. And then suddenly they start chatting. By the second film, you're like, OK, these monkeys be chatting to each other a bit. And that's all right. And it's on its way. There's some really good stuff. There's a brilliant scene. Do you remember the scene where... I think it's Tony Kebbell who plays Cobra, and he's like mucking up. There's a couple of human guards, and he sort of goes up to them like he's sort of still a circus type monkey, like messing around.
Oh, yeah. He
playfully picks up the machine gun and then just sort of strafes them and suddenly turns, switches on. And I think that is sort of the moment in the whole trilogy where you're like, oh, we're onto something here. And I just think they're what you want from an action film. They're like super entertaining, a bit of heart, a bit of kind of like, you know, loose satire with sci-fi, but just really good fun.
They're deep as well. I have said this many times on the podcast, generally not pro-CGI, but I do think the Planet of the Apes movies are really fucking great.
Yeah.
And the old computer stuff does work.
And at the end of the day, if you can't enjoy a film that's got monkeys riding horses in it, I don't know what you're doing going to the cinema.
Yeah. Monkeys riding horses with machine guns.
Hello. That's what they went into the meeting and just pitched. That was the one, that was the elevator pitch.
They
it
said,
happened.
Hello, and then walked out the room.
they pressed one click on a slide and it just said monkeys riding horses with machine guns. They went, hello, and then they walked out, slammed the door, and the guys were chasing them with briefcases with full of money.
Catch it. Of all the films, of all of them, if you had to, which film do you think you could have made and why?
This is a hard question, don't you?
I do.
Because the short answer is no film, probably.
Yeah, I think this is hard for people because everyone wants to be self-deprecating, but I'm asking for you to...
Oh, I'm not going to be. don't worry. You're on safe ground here. Citizen Kate. No, I my film is super aspirational, but I would like to think if I really turned my eye and my craft and I worked for years to making a film, the kind of apotheosis of what I would like to make, I gambled on that word, not sure it was right. Paddington 2. Oh. Now, listen.
Yeah, that's aiming very high.
I'm punching big, but what I'm thinking is, right, Barnaby and King, what's their background? Skepco. They were made by the Skepco. They were forged, you know what I mean?
Yeah, in the crucible of
Skepco. They were forged in the crucible of Skepco. And what they've done is apply to that Skepco a perfectly pitched layer of sentimentality. And if that isn't my brand, I don't know what is. So
that's true, and you can tell a narrative. I've seen the boxer.
I mean, listen, I'm not saying I could make Paddington 2, but what film would I like to make? I would love to make a film like that.
I'll accept it. What film have you pretended to like to impress people?
So many, probably. But so many. Probably in conversation with you. I just pretended to have seen, to be honest, half the time. Yeah. The one that I can't look past, though, actually goes back to when I was a kid. And I've always sort of been like, oh, yeah, Fantasia's good. But like, I never thought Fantasia was good.
Yes, that is a really good answer because it's undeniably boring, but it's definitely good and sort of impressive and clever. But that is a great answer. I think I've definitely said very positive things about Fantasia. Please don't make me watch that again.
No, I mean, and as a child, you're like, oh, I know why you'll like this little boy. It's got classical music in it. Do you know what I mean? There's no story, no gags.
Yeah, that's great.
Absolutely. I mean, who was going to watch? I mean, what were they thinking? It's incredible that it succeeded, really. Fantasia.
Great one. What film have you never seen that you think it's mad that you've never seen it?
Right, well, I nearly said Super Bob, because that is mad.
Have you not seen it?
Never.
That is mad. What film... What film do you love... that you don't expect anyone else to like?
See, this is how it starts. Next thing I know, I'm doing a gig. He's throwing shoes at me. It's the cycle of hatred. He was so nice about all my stuff as well. Terrible.
I cannot believe that. That is a
You can't. We're on the Zoom call, and I'm going to tell the listeners that his face is red at this point.
With not just red, I've got veins coming out. I'd say I didn't even know I had a vein there.
Deary me. In fairness, in my defence...
You're busy. It's 80.
No, that's not the point. It's when it... it's not like there's been a pandemic or any opportunity
No, that's fine.
But when it came out, you and I weren't close. I missed the initial thing, and then I've just not got around to it. But let's say... When I die again and come back on this podcast for the third time, I will give you my review, my honest review of Super Bowl.
That is quite exciting. Okay.
Are you happy to continue the interview?
we may continue.
Okay.
And I will. I'll just take a moment. Okay. We can continue.
Okay.
What is the film?
What's it about? What's Super Bowl about?
What film do you love that you don't expect anyone else to like?
Well, so I think this is a film that was probably critically okay, but I loved it and I would be wary of making someone else watch it. And that is A Cock and Bull Story.
A really good answer there.
Mm.
I agree with you on both counts.
So I love... the work of like Michael Winterbottom and Steve Coogan. When you say who would play you in your life, my aspirational answer is, can they make that film? That would be my dream. But I recognise I don't have the requisite
edge. You want Coogan to play you?
Yeah, I'm Bryden. Too nice, though, aren't I? Too nice.
You're going to be. It's going to be Bryden, isn't it?
It's going to be Bryden of the two. So that book, A Cock and Bull Story, or Tristram Shandy, I can't remember what the real name of the book is. I think it's Tristram Shandy.
It's the was a book. Signs of Tristram Shandy or something like that.
Yeah, he knows exactly. Well done, mate. I had to study that at uni, and I didn't do any work at university. In fact, I was so bad. I attended so few classes at university, they took the unusual step of suspending me from university, which to me was just a win-win. But it was one of the only books in my literature degree that I really engaged with. And the reason I did that is because it's kind of the advent of postmodernism in literature, as far as I understand it. It's really structurally interesting, and it does lots of interesting, it puts lots of pictures in, which at the time was unconventional. It does really interesting things with narrative and chronology. And the film is kind of made in that spirit, really. You know, it's not a direct adaptation. It's a film about the making of a film, as far as I remember, but it has that kind of multi-layered narrative that is reflective of the spirit of that book. And I really enjoyed that. I love those performances, but I think it's a bit up its own arse, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it's a film about filmmaking, I think. Like, it's a lot about
And the book is about writing a book. Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. And I believe the book is called The Life and Opinions of Tristram Shandy, Gentlemen. Okay. For the record, in case anyone's going to tweet me, all right?
If anyone has read books, back
leave
off.
Or leave it out. Yes, I agree with all of that. But that was the first time that Michael Winterbottom, Rob Brydon and Steve Hugan started their thing. And then they made loads of stuff. And they just kept making stuff and still doing it now.
I mean, they do it very well. Each other. They are, actually, yeah. Do you think they've kissed Brydon and Coogan? Do you think they've had a little kiss? I think they might have had penetrative sex, but no kissing.
I don't think they have kissed, because then all their chemistry would have gone.
Yeah, you're right. The tension is key to it.
What what film would you show a lover as a test to see if you should be together? I guess you call this, what's your deal breaker?
Well, my first deal breaker is, if we decide, and it's a deal that my wife breaks regularly, if we say we're going to watch a film together, do not watch that film without me.
Right, okay, good.
That really upsets me. I mean, I was so looking forward to watching Coco, and then she went on that plane, and I tell you what, I've not watched Coco since. I can't bring myself to. Oh, it's too painful a memory. But I'd love to think, look how much I love Casper. I'd love Coco.
Coco's amazing. You'd love it.
Maybe we should watch it together.
I will not watch that film with people because it makes me cry. Okay. I'm the opposite of you. My dream is that my person I love doesn't want to watch films with me, and I could just watch them on my own.
Of course. But that's not the film that I would choose. The film I would choose as a test of our compatibility would be Fighting With My Family.
Mm.
And the reason...
It's a lovely film.
Yeah, exactly. And the reason I choose that is because you've got to say to that person, listen, I need you to take a punt on this. It's a film about wrestling. Mm-hmm. Set in Norwich. And for a lot of people, I feel like they'd be like, I can't go there. You know, it's just too big a reach. I'm not sure. So I think you've got someone who's willing to embrace a bit of a risk in watching it. And then I think if they're not affected by it, if they're not moved by it, if they don't laugh at some moments and cry at some others, I would really take them to task on that. I think it's a really elegantly made film.
It's a brilliant film. Absolutely brilliant. Said it before, I say it again. Florence Pugh, greatest actor of her generation. What film made you the most uncomfortable?
Probably it will be when I watched Super Bob, I would imagine. with you standing over me.
Did you laugh? Did you like that bit? That would be me. Oh, you watched Super Bob. Don't talk. Don't answer that. That would be talking.
The film that made me most uncomfortable, I think, is Foxcatcher.
Oh, yeah. Okay, good answer.
Reason being, really reminded me of a teacher I had.
Really?
Yeah. I had a teacher, a kind of drama teacher, I don't think it's saying too much to say, when I was growing up, who sort of had that kind of benefactor role where they sort of felt a bit like a gatekeeper to the industry. You know, they would sort of offer encouragement and give you a platform, give you opportunity, but it was a transactional arrangement. And the tension in that relationship is very familiar to me. And actually the way the way it explodes at the end, I mean, obviously I didn't get shot at the end, but there was a similar outcome of, you know, the kind of simmering resentment bubbling over. And I just think it's a very well paced film. The build in the uncomfortableness of it is very good. And I think Steve Carell's brilliant in it. And I think there is something inherently creepy about comic actors playing these slightly freaky roles. I mean, I always think of 1 Hour Photo. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I love that. Beast, I'm not, I don't think your drama teacher is listening to this, but your therapist is absolutely lapping that one up.
Yeah. And that's not come up. There's
like
life
that.
In this, yeah. We can't quit now, I'll
you
tell
you. Can't quit now. What about
didn't you listen to the
teacher?
Podcast? Yeah.
What do you mean by transactional? I almost don't want to know.
I don't mean like, you know, anything.
You mean like you had
illegal.
To sort of make him feel special?
Great. Yeah. Yeah. And you had to maintain the relationship. You know, it was kind of like you belonged to that person to an extent.
Yeah.
You know, when you kind of flew the coop, that wasn't a happy thing for that person. They wanted to keep you under lock and key. They want not in a literal sense, I must stress, for legal reasons. I don't know. I think it's a classic kind of mentor guru thing where you foster this kind of very intense relationship that ultimately isn't sustainable. And I think in Foxcatcher, it's kind of a tragedy because it's a tragedy of a very, very, very lonely man who can't really cope when things are beyond his control.
What a fascinating answer. If you could show a child one film, what would it be?
Foxcatcher. No, I would show them. I'd take it around schools and be like, be careful, guys. I would show them a film I watched probably the second to last film I watched, which is Wall-E.
Okay.
I'll tell you why.
Yeah, please do.
I think it was made in 2008, right? And I don't really remember 2008. I don't remember what was going on in the world. But it felt, watching it the other day, incredibly prescient. I mean, not just in sort of climate terms and pollution terms. You know, Paris Climate Agreement was 2016 or something like that. So it is ahead of all that. But it's also about our addiction to screens, and it's a big thing for me. I mean, I'm a hopeless addict to screens and notifications and all those things. And I think the portrayal of that is quite good in the movie. I just think, I think it's instructive to kids. I also think it's a film about film in a funny way, because it's kind of an homage to silent movies. Yeah. It's got those little cutaways of Hello Dolly. So yeah, I just really enjoy it. And I think that it's got a kind of eco message and healthy living message that would be good for a hypothetical child. You're not having it.
No, I'm not having that, but that's a lovely answer. No, I am having that. It's a lovely answer. Beast, you have been even better. Could this sequel be better than the original? I think it could be.
Planet of the Apes 2.
It's exactly. This is the rise of the Planet of the Apes, dawn of the Planet of the Apes, the planet.
Whichever
planet
one
planet,
it is.
Planet of the Planet of the Apes. So you're back to life now. I'm going to let you continue to live. I'm not promising I won't kill you again. But for now, you can walk around however you like. However, I've just got my lawyer here. He'd just like to just check with your will, just in case you do die again. What film, you can only leave one, what film would you like to leave to your family and loved ones when you die?
I think it's got to be Casper, hasn't it?
Yeah. The greatest film ever made.
No, you know, it provides some hope that they might see me again as well. I've got some unfinished business. Probably.
And if they don't see you, it's because you were happy.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you didn't have unfinished business. Beast, I couldn't like you more, probably. Is there anything you want to tell people to look for and listen to? Your book?
No, they're busy, aren't they? You know, they've got stuff going on.
People are busy.
If they haven't watched my stuff, I forgive them. That's all I'm saying.
So you're saying to people, watch Super Bob if they haven't seen it. That's lovely, Beast. That's lovely. All right. Thank you so much, man. I guess I'll see you on Saturday.
Saturday night.
God bless you. Happy lifetime. Good night.
Good night.
So that was episode 135. Head over to patreon.com/Brett Goldstein for the extra 25 minutes of chat, secret and video with James. Go to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating. And instead of writing about the show, write about the film that means the most to you and why. I do read them. It makes me happy. It's a lovely thing to see. And it does help with the numbers. And it also means Maureen's all right. You know what I mean? She can be looked after. Thank you so much to Beast for doing the show. Thanks to Scroobius Pip and the Distraction Pieces Network. Thanks to Buddy Peace for producing it. Thanks to Acast for hosting it. Thanks to Adam Richardson for the graphics and Lisa Lydon for the photography. Come and join me next week for the beginning of a 2-part special with an incredible guest. It's going to blow your mind, this one. You look out for it. You're going to be very excited, I reckon. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. There's that to look forward to. Oh, yeah. So that is it for now. Thank you very much for listening. Have a lovely week, and in the meantime, please be excellent to each other. Sometimes I dream of becoming an actor. Have you ever dreamt of becoming an actor? Maureen, what is it you think I do for a living? Never mind, sounds like you need the New York Film Academy. NYFA offers workshops, BFA and MFA degrees and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, journalism and more, online and on campuses across the globe. To make films alongside industry professionals, explore more at nyfa.edu. Thanks, Brett. Thank you, Maureen.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.